Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. Meet Sherry Dusky Rinker and Tom Lichtenheld, creators of Steam Train Dream Train and Goodnight Goodnight Construction Site. Welcome to All the Wonders, the Children's Book Podcast. I'm Matthew Winner. This is episode number 327 of the podcast with Sherry Dusky Rinker and Tom Lichtenheld. Sherry and Tom have a new book out, a sequel to Goodnight, Goodnight Construction Site. It's called Mighty, Mighty Construction Site. And through enticing rhyme and beautiful illustrations, we explore what it means to really rely on one another in order to get the job done. And you're going to love meeting Sherry and Tom. They're a whole lot of fun. Here's episode number 327 of the podcast with Sherry Dusky Rinker and Tom Lichtenheld. Welcome to the podcast, Sherry and Tom. Sherry Rinker, to be proper. Tom Lichtenheld, to be proper. Welcome both to the podcast.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Sherry, why don't we start with introductions with you? Want to say hi? Want to say how people know you?
Okay.
Other than that you have a dog.
My dog, which I'm mortified of at the moment. And actually have scolded all my husband and both boys that should not be happening. I'm Sherry Rinker. I am the author of Goodnight, Goodnight Construction Site, illustrated by the fantabulous Tom Lichtenheld, and also Steam Train, Dream Train, and a book that I had come out last year with Patrick McDonald called Silly, Wonderful You, and a book that Tom and I are mostly here to talk about, Mighty, Mighty Construction Site, our sequel to Goodnight, Goodnight Construction Site.
Love it. Tom, want to make some introductions?
Oh, sure. I'm Tom Lichtenheld. I'm a illustrator and sometimes author illustrator. And as you've heard, I did some books with Sherry and I've done books with other people. And I just have a ball drawing funny pictures and trying to make kids laugh.
I think that sums up your illustrations perfectly, Tom. I feel like everything in your approach to illustration feels like a safe and happy and welcoming world, whether it's drawing children or animals or underpants or construction vehicles. It all feels good. And Sherry, you know, I think very clearly how much I love your use of language and rhyme and rhythm. I just admire people that pull it off as well as you do. So I'm glad to see so much of your work come together. And also that I have a 1.5-year-old at home who just loves to say goodnight to everyone by reading your Steam Train board books.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Jules is a fan. We'll see. Sherry, your dog made an appearance. We'll see if she does often.
Often, yeah, let's just bring everyone out.
Let's see. If I get too loud and laugh too much, she seems to be the, you know, the beacon that summons her to me on the podcast. So you're here to talk about Mighty Mighty Construction Site, the follow-up to Goodnight, Goodnight Construction Site. Sherry, that I love your book. I mean, we all love the book. It's been on the New York Times bestsellers for like 40 years now or something. Is it that long? It's been a while.
We're running up to, you know, half a century, so we're excited about that.
Well, it's neat to have a book like that that goes beyond the initial love that you might get from librarians or from whomever. Just when it reaches that point where it just is that book that everyone's buying for baby showers and for class libraries and for everything like that. Something that keeps a book sustained on a bestseller list like that is really fun, because it becomes, for me as a librarian, it becomes one of those books that I can reference to parents, and right away they know exactly what I'm talking about. And there's not a whole lot of books that are like that.
Mm. You know, it's so far beyond anything certainly that I ever could have even, certainly never imagined, never even would have dreamed to hope for. So it's been, it's been pretty miraculous. And we're truly blessed. I'm incredibly grateful for the support and, the little fans that come up to us and, you know, hugging their well-worn, loved books and asking us to sign them. And it's pretty amazing. Pretty great life.
I'm sure of it. The offer to do the sequel, to do more books with Chronicle, I assume that happened some point after the first book came out, right? That's typically how it happens, right? They start to see success, or they start to see, publisher starts to see bookstores buying more copies, and that sort of gives precedence to sequels. Is that correct?
You know, as you probably already know with me, Matthew, nothing happens sort of the usual way. And so I'll tell you my rather, if we have time, and cut me off if we don't. But basically how this happened was I had sold Goodnight Construction Site. And within the next year after that, after we had, it was going off to press and Tom was working on it or whatever, wherever we were in the process, it was out of my hands. And I had the idea for Steam Train. And I think you had heard that I got the offer for Goodnight, Goodnight Construction Site through the slush pile.
I was going to say, I think Jenny So or someone to that effect mentioned
So I... I'd written this manuscript, had no idea what to do with it. Finally, through a friend of a friend of a friend of a friend, I heard about the SCBWI. I joined it. I still have my very torn up, marked, post-it noted copy with highlighting that told me, here's what a cover letter should look like. And there's a little chart, and it said, approximately what you could get for an offer, and said first time author, author only, author illustrator, you know, basically. So I thought, okay.
It's like 20 bucks, right? If you're a first time author, 20 bucks for a manuscript sold.
Well, I have to tell you, when Mary Colgan, who is my editor for that book, called me and she made the offer, and I said, okay, well, I joined the SCBWI and I'm looking at their chart and it looks like you're right in there. So I think that's good. But I said, but I don't know. I feel like, you know, maybe I should call my dad or something to ask.
Oh,
and she laughed and said, oh, yeah, you know, kick the tires around a little bit, you know, whatever, that's fine. So, talk about like totally knowing nothing. Chronicle was the only slush pile I'd sent my manuscript to. So honestly, I knew nothing. So when I had written Steam Train, I actually, and I'm trying to remember, Mary had gone off to sort of travel the world, Mary Colgan, my editor, and I had heard that she had been replaced by someone else, but I didn't know who it was. And so I basically just called through reception and explained who I was and said, okay. And they said, okay, well, hang on, I'll put you up. You can speak to someone in children's. And I said, okay. And I explained who I was. And I said, so I've written another manuscript, and I'm just wondering if I should just send that through the slush pile again, or how that works.
And Sherry, that's amazing.
Incredibly stupid now, and I don't think that would the person who manned the desk at Children's is still there, but she kind of chuckled and she said, no, you know, now that you're a chronicle author, you would just give your manuscript ideas to your editor. And I went, oh, okay, then that sounds lovely. So it wasn't until, so I'd sent the manuscript, and in between all of that, I was traveling to New York for my very first BEA on my own dime, just because I was trying to figure out what this BEA stuff is, what this industry looked like. And when I had landed, I'd gotten a query from an agent, and, you know, was very excited. You know, who gets a query from an agent? I knew enough to know that wasn't normal.
Oh, yeah.
And by the time I got to my hotel, I had gotten an email from Melissa Manlove saying, I'm the new editor. I've taken Mary's place, and we want your train manuscript. And I said, oh, okay, well, I think I might have an agent. So it's just the craziest thing. Like, I've come into this so backwards and so naive and so stupidly, and I've made such ridiculous mistakes. And anyway, there's my story. Very long-winded. You can just cut that all out and pretend it didn't happen.
That's amazing. I think that story is not one I would ever trade for the world. And the reason why I had brought up about being on the bestsellers list is because I wanted to talk about the experience then of what it means to write a follow-up. But first, Tom, I'd love to hear how you became involved in Goodnight, Goodnight Construction Site. I assume that you're getting, you know, manuscripts offered to you from the different publishers that you work with, and making the decision for what feels right. But what, if you remember, what was that process like for getting Construction Site?
I had done my first book with Chronicle, which was Duck Rabbit. And I think I just finished that. And
that was with Chronicle.
Yeah.
I didn't even remember. Man, that book is awesome.
And that was probably book number, I don't know, 8 or 9 for me. Mm-hmm. But I'd always wanted to work with Chronicle, so that was a huge breakthrough, just huge, to have Duck Rabbit with them. And that was, I was still working full-time, so I'd taken a couple weeks off of work to do the artwork for that book and just finished it up. And they sent me the manuscript for Construction Site. And, you know, I immediately loved it. And I'm always looking for things that are unlike anything I've done before. So I figured, well, I like to draw trucks and vehicles, and I've not done a book for, you know, like pre-K kids before. My sweet spot for audience is probably a 7 or 8 year old. So I thought, well, this will be a, you know, expanding experience a little bit for me. So, you know, and I loved the rhythm and the rhyme and the story. And I thought, well, I've never done a bedtime book. I like to draw trucks. So, you know, it checked off a lot of nice boxes, and the manuscript was, you know, pretty tight. So, you know, it was virtually ready to go. So I said I would do it. I think I usually do some doodles right off the bat. Like, literally the first time I'm reading a manuscript, I'll have a pencil in my hand, I'll start doodling in the margins. And if I get excited and I like what I'm doodling, I'll do it. And so I did a few sketches and sent them back and said, yeah, I'd love to do this, and, you know, so the characters might look like. So it kind of evolved from there.
I love that to picture that experience of sort of the Tom Lichtenheld test of manuscript is,
yeah.
does it, you know, pull my hand to want to sketch in the margins? That's cool.
Exactly. And that's, you know, it's very instinctive. And frankly, that might be the most exciting time in the entire process. You know, when you're reading it for the first or second time and you start to doodle some things,
yeah.
And you know, because all the possibilities are there, you know. I joke that I procrastinate about starting a book, like starting the final illustrations, because before I start, the book is perfect. You know, in my mind, it is absolutely the best thing I've ever done. And doing actual illustrations is really just the process of beginning to fail. Because the thing you put on paper lives up to, you know, what you have in your head. So, yeah, I think that's the reason for procrastination. I've confirmed this with some other illustrators' friends, is the fear of failure. Hmm. As long as you don't start, man, it is awesome. So I've learned that I've got a little note up on my wall that says not starting is failing to get me to get started.
Yeah. I feel like I'm carrying that feeling into my entire life. The feeling of, well, if I just don't start, I can picture how it should be.
Yeah, it's perfect. That. Best thing you've ever done.
The best anti-advice I've ever heard on the podcast, Tom. Thank you.
Well, the problem is books that you don't draw generally don't sell very well. If you don't create the book, you're Touché. Not going to make any royalties on it.
Touche. Well, for Mighty Mighty Construction Site, I mean, and the other stuff that you've both done together, I love the way it has come together. And Tom, especially picturing whatever runs through your head, whatever inspiration you have coming into this, I like flipping through the book and seeing the different shots, if you will, that we have of the characters, the different vantage points that you're showing, the characters coming over the hills and getting down in the dirt and looking from above, mm-hmm. From what feels like we're up on top of the building that they're constructing. All of that really, I think, allows us to see the characters from all the different angles, which is something that your audience does. They pick up things and they look at things from all angles and they understand mm-hmm. things from all those angles.
So yeah.
To show it that way, yeah, is wonderful.
Well, I've never thought of it that way. That like a child, you're examining it from different angles. I think of it as a storyboard.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, coming up with interesting camera angles for different things.
Right, but in that same way, you're mm-hmm. you're thinking like a child will want to explore the story.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Sherry, yeah. Thinking like a child. This story...
That happens to be my specialty.
Well, good. You've been... This is like... Wait a second. So wait. A little aside about being a teacher. I am told that those of us that teach often... And I've also been told this is a thing about authors, so maybe you can confirm or deny it. That those of us that teach at certain levels tend to teach at that level because that's sort of where the important person came into our life or where we sort of feel like we connect the most with, perhaps because that's maybe in my case, that's where my maturity has stopped. I still am a third grade boy or something for my maturity.
No, I totally hear it. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I totally get that. And I don't know if it's when my own maturing stopped or when I felt the most sort of intellectually connected with my kids.
Exactly.
I'm not sure where that, yeah, but yeah.
But so in this story, then the thing that you're exploring, which for some, the angle, I didn't see it coming, and that made it even more rewarding for me. The angle that you took in Mighty Mighty Construction Site, I'd rather give you the chance to talk about your story before I wax on about it. But I would love to hear for you, what the story is in Mighty Mighty Construction Site and why you chose that angle.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you that. So Tom and I, so to your earlier point, eventually were asked to do a sequel for Goodnight, Goodnight Construction Site. And I had not at all in my wildest dreams seen that book going beyond the final spread, the final page. So it was a little... it was a little bit of a jolt to try to think, oh, well, now they have to wake up or do something. Or I think it took me a while to wrap my mind around that.
Yeah.
Because I think, you know, they went to bed. That's it. Story over. And I think that, not to put words in your mouth, Tom, but I think Tom had, you know, we both had that similar thing. Like, we had never anticipated sort of moving beyond that point. Mm-hmm. So we really, you know, I did some initial kind of ideating. My background was in, you know, design and advertising too. And so I sort of threw out a bunch of rough ideas. But Tom and I very much together came up with this concept. So we, you know, there were some things that just seemed really natural, like, okay, we at this point knew our audience pretty well. You know, our fans had been pretty devoted and pretty verbal about what they loved. And when I would go to a school visit or when we would speak together in front of children, Tom and I mean, it was the pure fascination with those big machines, just the complete and utter adoration with those trucks and what they can do. And I think the way that Tom illustrated them, you know, was just, oh, so completely perfect. The right mix of kind of tough and soft and sweet, but, you know, still really kind of, you know, big and rough and tumble. And so we knew that that was the vibe that worked. And I think pretty early on, the idea of just, you know, doing bigger and more, more trucks and, you know, and they had said, you know, well, what about Good Morning, Good Morning Construction Site? And, you know, I tried kind of tossing that around and just couldn't make a whole book out of getting ready for the day, really. You know, what did they do then? You know, I don't know, just all that really pedantic stuff about getting ready in the morning. It's not my favorite thing. Wasn't my kid's favorite thing, but the idea of getting up and at them and starting something new and big and cool and bringing more trucks in, that kind of really developed really pretty naturally. And the whole idea of teamwork and cooperation and, you know, the idea that every truck has this great strength, but they can't do everything. There are things that they, you know, they have a limited skill. So it was the idea of they need help, but that we didn't want to diminish them in any way or take away sort of their heroic kind of thing that kids had for them. So I think just kind of working together, and literally Tom and I sat in a room in a coffee house and kind of talked about it and worked it out and threw lines out to each other and came up with ideas of trucks that worked together. And really it was very much a team effort to develop this book.
I think what you're saying there is where I was so moved by the story is the pairing of vehicles, but there's never a hesitation. Well, on both sides, one, there's never a thought that this vehicle has tried and tried and just keeps failing and failing. So here comes someone in to pick up the slack. It's never that at all. It's that this is my strength, but to do this other half of the job, I need someone else with a different strength. And being able to so quickly in your text just bring that other character in, and there's just no question. You come in, you work with me, we get the job done together. And to see pair after pair of big and small, of short and tall, of those sorts of pairings, just come in and work naturally, not one dominant over the other or anything like that. Just they're just symbiotic from the moment they appear on the page together. That I thought was so powerful, Sherry. That I just didn't see it coming in the story. I thought, oh yeah, we'll have more construction sites, and from the phrase "mighty mighty," I thought we'll talk about, you know, working hard and a day's work and perseverance, which we have those qualities, but the pairing of, I mean, I think it mirrors an author and an illustrator working together, looking at, there are things that my words can do that your illustrations won't be able to convey the same way. And likewise, there's things that the illustrations have to do that my words just won't be able to accomplish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, that's really nice, Matthew. That's very, yeah, poetic. And I give Tom a ton of credit in all the books that we've done to take something that I never even imagined and bring it into the picture and to make it so much richer and more meaningful. You know, the blanket on top of cement mixer and the teddy bear and the nightlight, those little things that certainly aren't in the text. But I actually just had someone tweet me yesterday or the day before, and they said, my son and I are so excited about this book, but please, please promise me that cement mixer still has his blanket. Oh. And she said, blankie. And I said, well, absolutely, I promise you that he does, because Tom Lichtenheld is not a cruel man. So those sorts of things. And I also have to give some credit to Melissa Manlove, our editor. She was equally concerned with really making sure that none of the trucks had an ego and none of them were weak in any way, that they were all strong and mighty in their own special way, and that whole spirit of friendship and cooperation really carried through. And she was, you know, there would be a word or a turn of phrase, and she would call me back on it and say, oh, I just feel like maybe that is kind of indicating that he, you know, wishes he could, whatever. And so I think the three of us were a really good team that way, to try to be sensitive. And to your point, I mean, a book about, okay, let's all work really, really hard. I think that'll get you through a couple of pages maybe, but after that, you know, to really hold the interest of our audience, I think it's the action that they want to see, and all the trucks doing their stuff. I think that's really what the key is to keeping their and holding their attention.
Yeah, and all of them doing different things, you know, yes, fulfilling a different role in the process. And that's what was fun for me, is to get into the process visually and, you know, learn what all these vehicles do, and then depict them, you know, working together to get some particular little job done. Was really fun to do that.
The spread, Tom, with the with Pumper's boom unfolding,
yeah,
going across the gutter there. That yeah, that stopped me right there. I just thought that was such a beautiful spread. I love in your books, in your illustration, your approach to illustration, but especially in the steam train books and in the construction site books, I love the gradients that you employ in your art. I love that I can see the yellows in the dirt, and I love that I can see there's just, I understand that it comes from the paper that you're using and the pastels that you use, but the texture that comes across is just something that feels like I can run my fingers across it, and it adds maybe a little more life to the page. And so, yeah. That, man, that one spread that you just got, this rainbow of red stretching from the characters over to what they're creating together. I just love that.
Yeah, that was a fun spread to design, because one of the challenges is to design the illustrations in the book so it stays dynamic, you know, so you don't repeat an angle or a device ever in the entire book. And every time you turn the page, it should feel both familiar and new. And, you know, once in a while you get to throw in a great device, like going all the way across the spread with the pipe of a pumper truck. And it's just really exciting to do those things. It reminds me of a quote from someone I greatly admire, who is Dan Santat. And I saw him at a conference, and he got up and he said, "I'm not an illustrator, I'm a designer who can draw." And what that means is that first and foremost, what you're doing is designing a book from start to finish, page by page, spread by spread, and then you're illustrating it to make that design come to life.
What a great quote.
Who can draw? Isn't it?
Yeah. I'm writing it down. I don't want to lose that.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, Dan Santat. How about it?
Yeah.
Tom, what did you do? You mentioned that as you were starting working on Goodnight, Goodnight, that you had still been working full time. What work do you come from? Sherry, I heard that you came from marketing, but what about you, Tom?
Similar field. I was an art director in advertising for many, many years, and I stumbled into children's books by accident, and it was a blast. So I did it for about 10 years while I was still working full time. So when Duck Rabbit came out, I decided to make the leap, because I had some momentum with that book, and I made the leap and quit my day job and started doing books full time, and haven't looked back.
That's great. Knowing when it's time. I mean, I hear about people maintaining their jobs and people taking that leap when it feels right, and just knowing that sometimes it's 10 years, sometimes it's however many years. I love that it sounds like if I were to have this interview with you, I don't know, 20 years ago, you might not have even had on your radar that you would have been working in children's books.
Not at all. It was a complete fluke, but man, was I lucky.
What a cool fluke.
I feel the same way. Absolutely. I was a graphic designer day in and day out, and grew to a really good job. I never imagined that this kind of a, you know, little inspiration to write this book and send it off would ever change the path of my life so drastically.
But you said
I think
to...
it's...
go ahead, Dom. Sorry.
When people ask me how to get into children's publishing, if I go back to the stories I've heard from people, very few people take a straight route to it. Most people come at it from an angle, from some other career or some other discipline, which is really interesting.
I think that it's neat when you hear those stories of whether it was that, you know, they have kids and so they just started reading and reading and reading, and they found that in some cases they were loving the books even more than their children that they were reading to, or that they I don't know, just you're right, the myriad of entry points into children's publishing is so cool and so neat that that all of you have such different stories to tell, because, you know, I've got a library full of a whole lot of different readers. And so, it's something to be grateful for that we have, especially you both creating these wonderful, wonderful books for such a wide range of readers. So thank you. Thank you for the time you took tonight to talk to me, but thank you for, really just your time in children's publishing already, for taking that leap and for all the steps that led you to today.
Wow. Well, I feel like I should thank the world and thank you. And how do you say you're welcome to this amazing, amazing thing that we get to do day in and day out? It's just such a joy.
Oh, I know the answer to that. You keep making stuff.
Yeah.
As a person.
We're working.
I tell myself that, every book I do is just an effort to get permission to do the one after that.
Oh, that's cool.
So if I do this book, if I do a good enough job on this book, maybe they'll let me do another one.
Oh, that's lovely.
I like that. That attitude can propel you forward like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Tom, along those same lines, I saw a little write-up on you in Children's Publishers Weekly, the children's edition today, your new book with the Stick and Stone sequel. That's exciting. Congrats.
That's very,
A new book with Beth. Yeah, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
Oh, Tom, you work with all the cool people. I love it. I love it so much. Well, before I let you both go, I want to give you a chance to speak directly to your readers. I'm glad that we have brought them up so much. It's very clear to me how much both of you work to honor them. So I want to give you a chance just to have final word to them. Sherry, I'll start with you. I'll see a library full of children tomorrow morning. I think, Sherry, you often see pictures of them on social media. So I'd love to know what message I can bring to them from you.
I love how connected we are day to day, Matthew. I sort of feel like we already know each other. Okay, well, first, feel free to edit this out, but could I pitch something that I'm working on that I'm super, super excited about?
Oh, well, sure.
I'm going to just throw this in because when you talk about libraries full of children, I was once one of those children and fell in love with Virginia Lee at about the age of 6 years old. And later this year, I have a book coming out with John Rocco, my tribute to Virginia Lee Burton called Big Machines. So the Virginia Lee Burton story. So there's my little pitch.
Sherry, can I just throw out that in my book mail today, I received a copy of that. And I was a bit giddy.
Oh, yay. Mm. Didn't John do an amazing job?
Oh my gosh. I only leafed through it. I haven't even touched your words yet.
Okay.
But holy cow.
Well, I don't know. You feel free to edit out this whole thing if it's not appropriate.
Oh,
but,
stop it.
When I was in a library as a kid, those, specifically The Little House, and then later, you know, Mike Mulligan and Katie and Choo Choo and Mabel the Cable Car, those were the books that really lured me into reading. So I hope that while the kids are hanging out in the library, somebody picks up The Little House and, you know, kind of rambles through it and sees Ginny's beautiful work, and maybe that'll be the thing that that catches them and makes them love reading the rest of their life, because that's certainly what did it for me. So, okay, I'll get back on track with you. So my message for the kids sitting in the library, the thing I try to tell every child I meet is just keep reading, keep reading, keep reading, keep reading. It's a world to explore. It's people to know. It's perspectives to gain. It takes you so far beyond where you're sitting and what you know and the world that you see every day. So important. And the other thing that I say is, you know, if you haven't found, you know, how many times have we all been told from a child, you know, I don't really like reading. I'm not a reader. I don't like reading. And I just really do believe that they just have not found the right thing. And I think that's part of why trained librarians and LRC directors are so, so, so important. I always say getting the right book into the right kid's hand at the right time is the key to success. Just keep looking. If you haven't found the book that hooks you or the thing that makes you love reading, you will. Just keep at it. And the other thing that I do try to tell kids is, you know, not everyone is a born reader. It doesn't come easily to everyone the way that, you know, hitting a baseball doesn't come easily to everyone, or ice skating or playing soccer or shooting a hoop. Sometimes for some people and a lot of people, reading takes some work. So if you're struggling with it, then keep trying. And if you're really struggling with it, don't be afraid to talk about that with a grown-up that you trust and get the help, because it's the key to everything, to being what you want to be and growing up to be successful. So keep working at it.
Thank you, Sherry. Tom, same question. What message can I bring to the children from you?
Well, when I read this question today, I thought about the experience of standing in front of kids when I go to schools and I'm standing there, and what message I want to give them as I'm looking down at their little faces. And I realized, oh, the first thing I want to say is, hey, you, get your finger out of your nose.
Walked right into that. Oh, boy.
Sorry. Okay, seriously. You know, the real answer is this. Again, I was thinking about my school visits, and when I'm standing up there drawing, and I'm at the pad, and I start to draw a few lines, and the kids fall silent. And then as they see the thing I'm drawing actually take shape, whether it's a truck or a train or a shark, whatever it is, I hear these little gasps, and the kids will say things like, "You're good," as if they didn't really think I could draw. And it's always so funny. I say, "Yeah, I guess I'm okay." But, you know, it's just funny to hear that. But what I want to say to them is, you guys might be in awe of what I do, but I'm in awe of you guys. And I think every children's author would say the same thing. Per our discussion earlier about arrested development, you know, most children's authors are stuck at age 8 or 9, and we'd give anything to go back there. So we are in awe of children, and we love to listen to you and hear what you have to say, hear what you think of the writing, hear what you think of the world you live in and how you see it. So we're just probably more in awe of you than you are of us.
This podcast is recorded and produced by me, Matthew Winner, in my library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland. You can subscribe to the podcast and access the archive of over 250 episodes at All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com and check out other podcasts from All the Wonders, including the Picture Booking Podcast with Nick Patton, a semi-weekly podcast about picture books and the people who make them, Books Between, a podcast hosted by Karina Allen, helping to connect kids ages 8 to 12 and their parents, teachers, and librarians with books that they'll love, and the Best Book Ever This Week podcast, hosted by me, with book reviews about all sorts of amazing books. Our theme music is by Emily Arrow. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referred to. Listeners, if this episode connected with you, I'd love to hear it. Leave a comment at allthewonders.com or rate this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing this podcast with friends through Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that's a very good thing indeed. Coming up on the podcast, Matt Cordell returns with Wolf in the Snow. See you then, and thanks for listening.
We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep, and I'll see you there.